I believe that two democratic states, Israel and Palestine, living side by side in peace, is in the best interest of America and the world. I believe it's in the long-term security interests of Israel, and I know it'll provide a more hopeful society for the Palestinians. And that's why I articulated this vision early in my presidency, and that's why I'm so pleased to have to watch two leaders, you and President Abbas, work hard to achieve that vision.
Catapult the propaganda. The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to the brand new bunker.
This is our first fireside blather in the new bunker.
We've not had a fireside blather in a long, long time.
It's been a while.
Back in the old original bunker. When we were on RBN, Those were fireside blathers. You didn't know that.
That's right. We didn't talk about it.
No, yeah. We didn't know. We didn't want to reveal that little bit of information, but we can pass along to you. That here on the 39th latitude, we have fireside blathers coming from PID Bunker here in the Shelbyville, Indiana area.
That's right. So greetings from the 39th parallel and welcome as we
greetings, Earthlings.
That's right. First show of 2008, and we look forward to some of the things that we can expect in 2008 based on the little news items that have been slipping through the cracks as we've been, we collectively have been getting through the holidays, celebrating the new year, and so forth. There have been little things that have been going on in the background, sort of like
background radiation.
Well, yeah, background radiation, or I was going to say more like the kind of stuff that happens on a Windows PC in the background when you think you're doing something else and there's stuff in the background
software.
And you're downloading software in the background without your knowledge. That's kind of what's been going on here. And so we're going to talk about that over the next hour
You know, that's an amazingly really good
and
analogy.
You're going along and suddenly you get this little error message to stop. You cannot proceed unless you do this. And it's something you probably don't even want to do, but you know, it's kind of like having a Windows PC. And for those of you who think I'm just being Mac-centric about this, well, you're right. But that's beside the point. The government.
In fact, we've changed our name to Mac Gilbert.
That's right.
No, seriously, we appreciate the fact also that many of you were understanding and sent us little notes last week. Derek had a birthday. We had furniture moving day last Sunday.
Yeah.
It was quite a weekend. If you've been paying attention over the last few weeks, and also looking at our blogs, you'll notice that we have moved to Shelbyville, Indiana, and we moved in with no furniture whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. An inflatable bed, and that was about it.
We got that from my sister. Mm-hmm. But since then, thanks to wonderful angelic sisters and a niece and her husband, they have kitted us out. We've got all kinds of furniture. There are just a few things like, well, we're still sleeping on that inflatable mattress, but you know what? It's not too bad.
No.
And in the meanwhile, we've not only had, you've had a birthday, but we had our anniversary. We've been married now for 10 years.
That is a
met online
blessing. Yeah. And that's the amazing thing is that you hear so many horror stories about the predators who will use the internet as a means to.
And there are predators out there.
Yes, troll for victims, but that was not the case. It certainly wasn't my intent when I sent you that first email.
I know. I'm glad you weren't trolling for a victim.
That's right.
But it worked out really well. Praise God for that. I mean, I really do feel like you and I were led together, and I don't for a minute think that everyone who meets on the internet is that way.
Yeah.
Nor, I mean, you can meet in church and be meeting the wrong person. So I'm just praising God that you and I have, gosh, we've had a good 10 years.
We have. And someday we'll get into more of the details about the unlikelihood that we would ever meet.
Yeah.
And why we think that the hand of God was behind all of this. But
we really do. And it started out with me in Indiana, and here I am again.
That's right. We've come in full circle.
Yep.
So back here, just on the outskirts of Indiana's place, or Indianapolis, as it's more commonly known, where they're licking their wounds after a very tough 28-24 loss to the San Diego Chargers in the NFL playoffs. Set that aside and look at what's been going on in the news. You know, boy, all the horsemen seem to be out there riding. And we, of course, mean the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the rider on the pale horse, you know, pestilence. In England, if you've not been paying attention, nearly 3 million of people are afflicted with what's become known as their annual winter vomiting illness or norovirus.
Yeah, this is the worst that they have been hit. I mean, it is so bad that entire wards of hospitals are being shut down because they simply cannot take any more patients. People going to school, going to work, they're being told, do not go in sick. Mm-hmm. Do not go in until you have been past this for several days, if not longer, because they are just... It's if you're not familiar with norovirus, it's what has been hitting the cruise ship industry now for the last 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. The Norwalk virus, norovirus. It is not a happy camper, and it mutates readily. So if you've had it once, you can get it again.
Yeah. And now, just to put that in terms for our U.S. listeners, who we know make up the bulk of the listenership of PID Radio, 2.8 million in the U.K. would translate to roughly 14 million Americans, mm-hmm. based on the population size. There are about 60 million in the U.K. Multiply the number in the U.K. afflicted by five, mm-hmm. and that would be the impact here in the United States. Now, just imagine what it would be like here in the U.S. with 14 million people afflicted with a serious gastroenteritis, mm-hmm. which is what this norovirus is. Basically, you're incapacitated for days. And this has been going on now, apparently, every winter for the last few years. And this year, it's not only hitting a lot more people, it's hitting especially early in the season.
Now, let me take you a little bit further. There is, what is it? Isn't an executive order that's in place that, I think it is, that allows the president at his or her discretion to declare martial law and to send in the military in an area that any state cannot handle what it is. And it can even be something as simple as the flu.
Mm-hmm. If it's an infectious disease and it's determined by the CDC and the Department of Health, that Health and Human Services, that the government needs to intervene, then, there they are.
Yeah, so what I'm saying here, of course, is in the UK. I'm almost surprised they haven't gone that far, but because they are, I'll tell you what, that country scares me.
The UK is at a state now where the Prime Minister there, Gordon Brown, who is Tony Blair's successor, is saying about their because of their fragile economic situation. I mean, we talk about the huge debt of the United States, but mm-hmm. in terms of percentage of gross domestic product, the UK's debt is twice as bad mm-hmm. as the US. And in order to try to cut costs, their new initiative for their socialized, universal healthcare system is self-treatment. And this is not a joke.
No.
Self-treatment. If you think you've got something, call it in. And mm-hmm. we'll tell you how to, it evokes an image of that television commercial a while back mm-hmm. some investment company, of a guy on the phone with his surgeon who's telling him to take the knife between the third and fourth rib and make
an
incision.
Shouldn't you be doing this?
And that's essentially what's happening in the UK, especially for people with chronic diseases like, arthritis or, mm-hmm. whatever. You manage your own pain. Well, that's what our grandparents were doing,
I know, and they didn't have to pay extra taxes to get it done.
The government for the privilege of treating themselves. Well, that's what's happening in the UK, and that may be coming to the United States, especially if we get a Democrat for president with a Democratic Congress to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
Obama, Hillary, John Edwards, the major candidates, all espousing some form of socialized medicine. But let's be fair, many of the top Republican candidates are doing the same. This leads to another story when you start getting into government management of health care, for the common good. And it leads to a story that I think should be an eye opener for all Americans in, as to how free we really are. There's a story that's been reported pretty much by WorldNet Daily only outside of Colorado where the story took place. An 11-year-old boy who was horsing around outside his family's home. They live in a trailer park in Colorado. And was horsing around, tried to grab onto the door handle of a car that his sister was driving. He slipped and fell, bumped his head on the ground. His parents took him in and applied ice to it and gave him some pain medications. Well, a neighbor saw this happen, apparently. Don't know who the neighbor is. The neighbor's still unidentified. Called paramedics. The paramedics showed up, and the parents refused to allow the son to be taken to the hospital. Said, look, and the father apparently was a medic in Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and said, I know what to look for here, and I don't want you to take him to the hospital. He's fine. He's going to be okay. Well, the paramedics were upset with the parents' refusal to allow the boy to be taken to the hospital, to the emergency room, and went to a magistrate. The magistrate authorized the sheriff in this community to take the boy, and when the sheriff contacted the parents, the father basically said, you know, you are not going to enforce this order. They came back with a SWAT team, and at 11 o'clock at night, broke down the family's door, took the boy while holding the rest of the family at gunpoint, and took him to the emergency room at the local hospital.
Yeah, knee to the back on the the older sister, as
right, right. And we're talking about, you know, kids, 11-year-old, 16-year-old kids being forced to the ground and held at gunpoint.
And didn't the story go that the sheriff lied to the father? He said, all you have to do is show us that he's okay.
Yeah, when he came to the window.
And we'll let it go. And the father said, okay, so this is going to be the end of it. You see, he's okay. No, as soon as soon as the SWAT team saw that boy and knew, okay, that's the boy.
Right. Then they punched through the front door, broke in. This took place at 11 o'clock at night. And the boy was taken to the hospital where, after being evaluated, it was recommended that the parents give the boy painkillers and apply ice, which is what they've been doing.
Exactly.
But I think there are several aspects of this story that are very disturbing. Number one, the fact that a phone call from an anonymous tipster led to this SWAT team raid.
Exactly.
The name of the family is the Shiflett family.
Aren't they homeschoolers?
Don't know that they're homeschoolers, but according to the stories at WorldNet Daily, and we'll put links to these, of course, in the PIDradio.com show notes, they do appear to be evangelical Christians.
Okay, that maybe is what made me think that, because, well, you can go on, that how they tested to make sure he was okay.
Right, right. When they brought him inside, right, they had him recite Bible verses from memory to make sure that his memory wasn't affected and that he was still, you know, cognizant, or, you know, thinking clearly. And that's when they determined that he didn't need to go to the hospital, the parents, that is. So based on that, now we don't know what, you know, the family's religious beliefs might have had to do with the government's intrusion here.
Right.
But frankly, you know, that's kind of a side aspect of the story that we don't want to, you know, play that out of proportion.
Now, mind you, had the boy been unconscious or something really, you know, that required medical attention in a hospital setting, you know, it could have been that we'd be sitting here applauding at this point. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the government intruded based on a tip from a neighbor.
From a neighbor who is who still, at this point, is still unidentified. The social services director of Garfield County, Colorado, which is where the story took place, said her office is required by state law to intervene when they receive a report of possible mistreatment of children, possible mistreatment. And the county sheriff, you know, and again, we're getting the side of the story from the parents as opposed to the sheriff's side of the story. But his response was, I was given a court order by the magistrate to seize the child and arrange for medical evaluation, and that's what we did, end quote. That was the quote from WorldNet Daily.
Now, I think that sheriff was probably in a bad spot.
It's probably not an order that he wanted to enforce, but a court said you have to enforce it, and for whatever reason, the sheriff judged that the use of the SWAT team was necessary to do it. Now, there may be some history with this family. I don't know. But the fact is that ultimately what you've got is a government using armed force to go into a home and abduct a child for the purpose of medical evaluation. This is like something out of 1984.
I totally agree. Let me bring up another story that's been in the news that you may have heard of that I think is connected.
Okay.
And that's the story of the woman who was found living with her, was it four daughters' corpses?
Yes, in Washington, D.C.
Exactly. So those who would, you and I personally think it's an invasion of that father's privacy, that the fact that a tip from a neighbor saying, go and get him, was disturbing. People on the other side are going to point to that sort of story and say, if only a neighbor or a teacher had said, "Little John, little Jill, or whatever the kids' names. We haven't seen the 14-year-old lately, or we haven't, you know, these kids haven't been in school since March,
right?
As I understand, and so what happened there?
Well, there was a case where the children had just disappeared, and in fact,
there appear to be ritualistic overtones to it, because the 14-year-old was found with stab wounds. And didn't she, what was it
the
mother said? 16-year-old, sorry. What was it the mother said? That
the mother said that they had been possessed by demons and had died in their sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some ritualistic aspects possibly to this. Don't know very many details of this story, although the author of the article, which we'll link to at PIDradio.com, did mention the fact that the mother told school authorities in the D.C. area that she was going to homeschool her children.
I know, and that's why I asked about the homeschooling on the other one, because I think that these two stories will be connected as people start to say, we need that neighbor to call in that tip. You need to keep an eye on what's going on in your neighborhood. And in fact, going back to post 9/11, right after that, the kids were told by FEMA and DHS in the high schools and middle schools, rat on your neighbors, rat on your family. If so, you've got to let us know, is someone plotting against the United States?
The government was forced to back down after a privacy rights activists complained about a program where they wanted to use meter readers and postal workers.
And truckers.
And truckers.
And I think they're still doing that.
Yeah, as sort of an informal network of informants to funnel tips to the FBI and to the police officials.
Well, remember what Jesus said. He was going to turn family members against each other, neighbors against each other.
Well, the one difference between the story from D.C. and the story in Colorado is that paramedics did have a chance to examine the young boy, Josh Shiflett, before before they left. They were allowed to examine him, but the father and mother said, you are not going to take him to the hospital. You can check him out, but that's all you're going to do. And John Shiflett, I'm sorry, not Josh, but they went to the magistrate anyway and said, you know, he refused our recommendations, and so we got to take him to school now, or take him to court and force them to let us go and collect him. And the state, rather than the state opted to use armed force to enforce the magistrate's decree.
Can I connect one more story?
Please
May I, please? Third story that was in the news last week of a man whose house was on fire.
Sioux City, Iowa. Yep.
And when the fire trucks got there and the police, the man whose, was it two children who were inside?
Two stepdaughters
who were inside, both dead. The man said that it was, he was casting a spell and it had gone wrong.
According to the police chief in Sioux City, the girls appear to have died from strangulation and stab wounds, died prior to the fire. There does, from the story, it appears that there were some, there was evidence of some sort of ritual that was being performed down in the basement of the home.
And just so you understand, I am not for 1 minute saying that that first family in Colorado was doing anything ritualistic.
No.
What I'm saying is there are those who well may connect that with these other two stories and say, if only we may well have saved that young man by sending that sheriff over there. Who knows what they were going to do with him? Who knows what goes on behind those doors? You've got why it takes a village to raise kids.
Yeah. Sadly, what you get when you start going down that road is it takes a police state. And that is what we are ultimately leading to. And again, just kind of an early wake-up call here in 2008 at what we're looking for, looking ahead, not looking for, but what we expect to see coming in 2008 and the years ahead. Now, we can go a couple of different directions here. We could go to the Real ID, or we could bring in another story about children who appear to have been the victim of ritualistic.
Well, let's say it was children for a while.
All right. Sharon, who's been editing and doing a remarkable job in collecting stories, just not necessarily underreported by the news, because this next story, it was a case that was covered extensively in the news, but just connecting the dots in a different way at peeringintodarkness.com. That's sort of like the daily news update version of PID Radio. Found a story that didn't get much play, at least in the televised media here in the U.S., because we're all, consumed with whether, who's going to win the next presidential primary race. The McCann story, Madeleine McCann from the UK. You may remember this story, the young lady who disappeared after being left alone in a hotel room by her parents while they were on vacation in Portugal. Madeleine McCann apparently managed somehow to leave a trace of blood in a rental car that was rented by her parents 2 weeks after she was reported missing. Now, how is that possible?
Don't you wonder about that?
Yeah, this was information just released by the government and by the police in Portugal within the last 7 days. So, this is as puzzling as the telltale bloodstains connected to the O.J. Simpson murder trial. You know, blood that shouldn't have been where it was supposed to be, and yet it somehow gets lost in the shuffle. There are a lot of aspects to this case, and Sharon did a lot of research and reading up on this case over the past week, and there are a lot of elements of this case that just don't make sense.
Oh, it's so disturbing.
Until you consider the possibility that things are happening or happened here that
have a spiritual component.
Have a spiritual component. That's a good way of putting it.
It's really disturbing. You know, when this first hit the news, you and I were listening to it and watching it on the news, and we even said then to each other, there's not something not right about this story. We've got a couple, an affluent couple, who, excuse me, is on vacation in Portugal. They are dining out routinely every evening with at least one other, if not several other couples that they've gotten to know, and they leave their children, these couples leave their children in the hotel room, which they said was something like 40 yards away, 30 yards away. Anyway, it was not within earshot. The McCanns did not hire a babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
They could have. His reply was, well, when you hire a babysitter, and I'm paraphrasing, you don't know what you're going
to
get.
Yeah, so better to leave the children in the care of the
unattended,
older, a four-year-old.
Well, she wasn't even four. She was three. She wasn't four yet. She was almost four. And then two younger children, two twins, a set of twins, all alone in a hotel room. Even if they had been sleeping, you never know what kids can get into. They can stand up. They can get caught in a curtain. They can, you know, all sorts of things can happen that adults should always be there. Even if you know 100% that no one's ever going to take that child. But they didn't know that. Here they are wealthy. Well, I'll say affluent. I don't know that wealthy. But anyway, they had enough money to take a nice vacation to Portugal. And he is a friend of Gordon Brown. So he's running
connected.
In some circles. And there are some who speculate that he actually works as some sort of a liaison informant in some way with MI6 or one of those departments. So it's hard to tell what the real story is. In fact, there was speculation at one time that Madeline had been taken because he works for the British government, that it had been part of a scam to force him into some sort of bad position, get him to co-opt to the other side, whatever that other side would be. But anyway, Maddie was taken. There are so many stories, various confessions to the police during that first 24-hour period. Okay, I went back to the room, said the dad. I saw a man, shape that looked like he or she, this person had a child underneath his coat. Did you follow up on that? Did you chase that person? I find no evidence of that. They supposedly sent someone to check, a nanny-type person, to check on the babies, and that nanny has said she went before a certain time, and then she's also said she went after a certain time. She said she saw a shadowy person with possibly a child under his coat on her way in. She said she saw one on her way out. Either way is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you see one on your way in and you get in there and you see the child's gone, then something is bad, because only if the child had been under that coat, you know, she wouldn't have found the child there. If she had seen this person as she was leaving, you run back and make sure that child is still there.
Right.
You are supposed to do your job. The child comes first. Well, since that day, they have been in all sorts of hot water with the Portugal police. And it looks to me like the Portuguese have, from the get-go, assumed that the parents are somehow involved. And, of course, now with this evidence, the blood evidence, it really looks bad for the McCann couple.
And I was mistaken. It was not 2 weeks after her disappearance. It was nearly 4 weeks after her disappearance that this rental car was rented. And the Portuguese police say DNA evidence confirms that it belonged to Madeline.
Yes, and that is so disturbing. How on earth would it be in there?
4 weeks later.
As a writer, I can imagine what may have done. If I had a character that did that character may have come back to dispose of a body. And it's not just DNA. It's DNA blood. It wasn't just DNA.
It was blood, right.
It wasn't like she had, because she's been carrying a stuffed toy for a long time. A toy that should never have been allowed to be in her possession, because what Kate McCann, it's Kate, right?
Yeah.
Kate McCann said this is what she told the police. She knew instantly that Madeline had been taken when they went back to the room, because she walked in and Madeline's favorite stuffed toy was up on a shelf rather than in the bed. That should have been one of the first things that the police examined.
Sure, because if it was up on the shelf, you presume it would have been touched by whoever took her.
And yet in photographs from the scene and always since then, mm-hmm. Kate McCann has that stuffed toy.
And this is an echo of the disturbance of the crime scene that took place in the case of JonBenet Ramsey.
Very much so. This case is so much like that. Well, what really bothers me now is within, I think it was 10 or 11 days after the disappearance of their child, they trademarked her name.
Trademarked her name.
Trademarked her name and set up a corporation. I think it's called findmaddie.org or something.
Yeah, findmadeline.com.
Like that. And they sell t-shirts and all sorts of stuff in a shop. They have raised within the last few weeks, because they were crying poverty. They have, so we only have a couple of thousand pounds left mm-hmm. to wage the fight to try to find her. They've now, it's at the time I looked a few days ago, it was 1.2 million pounds that they have. And yet they're crying poverty, yeah. And they are now reported to be in negotiations with a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Now, just again, for our American listeners, 1.2 million pounds translates into about $2.5 million. $2.5 million donated through this website mm-hmm. for the purpose of finding this young lady.
Exactly. And the reason they say that they need the money is because they have to travel to try to find her, and they have not been working. You know what? I have to say that if you and I had $2.5 million, I don't think we'd burn through it that quickly.
We could do a lot of traveling on $2.5 million.
Building up a legal defense fund.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's going to take some pretty high-priced lawyers to construct a defense.
It is, and let me remind you that she disappeared on May the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
May the 3rd of that year, astrologically, there are many who say it was not May the 1st, but May the 3rd of 2007. That was Beltane.
Really? Now, Beltane is normally
May 1st.
Yeah. And one of the also Walpurgisnacht, Witch's Night. Is that how it translates from German?
Yeah. The opposite of Beltane is Samhain. Samhain,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those are two very high ritualistic cross-quarter days. By cross-quarter, I mean if you were to look at a circle of time, the north, south, east, west are the quarter days, mm-hmm. and the ones in between those are the cross-quarter days. In other words, if you tilted it 45 degrees, that X that you get, if you tilted that 45 degrees, then every, you know, it would be very similar to a clock. But the cross-quarter days are very high ritualistic days, and they often involve, anciently, mm-hmm. sacrifice.
Human
sacrifice,
right. Interesting.
And add to this mm-hmm. that she, and again, I'm not, I want to preface this by saying this has no implication with regard to fertility treatment for many young couples. That Maddie was born through in vitro fertilization. So it's possible that she could have been a genetic construct. Again, I'm talking as someone who studies these things and as someone with a bit of an imagination. So bear in mind, I'm not saying I know for a fact this is what happened, but it's one of the many questions, one of the many flags that I came across when I was reading the information about this case. Maddie also has a congenital coloboma in her right eye. Mm-hmm. That makes it a very interesting type of a person if you're going to really go down that road and think, okay, what is the purpose of a blood sacrifice? And again, we don't know that she's dead.
No.
But I have to say, truthfully, she's been gone a long time.
We're speculating and thinking way outside the box here. So, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, this is truly just really is speculation, but I'm telling you what goes through my mind. That right eye, I always think, okay, the eye is very important occult, as far as occult rituals and beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We're also told with regard to the Antichrist. Now, I'm not even talking about Maddie being that, but I'm just saying, for instance, Horus and the Antichrist and so many other, you know, mythological or real. We believe that some of those names are based on real people, Osiris, Horus.
Sure.
They have a defect in their right eye. There's something wrong with one of their eyes. She had a coloboma, which looks like a keyhole.
Yeah. And you'll see
so
it prominently displayed.
So if you're trying to open up a gateway with a blood sacrifice, my question is that enhanced in any way to have such a defect in your child?
Yeah, that's a good question. I again, we don't know the answer to this. We're just saying that it just strikes us as odd, and that this latest bit of information coming from the police in Portugal, that blood found in a rental car rented by Maddie McCann's parents 4 weeks, nearly 4 weeks after her disappearance, conclusively, according to the Portuguese police, belonged to Madeline. That blows the whole story put forward by the parents out of the water if she's still alive 4 weeks later and they happen to rent the same car that, you know, contained traces of her blood. You know, either it's a coincidence of cosmic proportions that whoever abducted her happened to rent this car and her parents rented the same vehicle 4 weeks later, or Maddie was still alive and in the presence of her parents 4 weeks after she was reported missing. Either way, very disturbing information, and again, disturbing due to the possible connection to the time, the date of the time of the season.
It is, and let me just say one more thing. I connected this in the article that I wrote about this just horrifying series of the abduction, you know, the what the family's going through. If it turns out that they are innocent of all stuff, of anything other than just being negligent and taking care of her, my heart goes out to them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look that way. But we have talked about the television show Millennium many times. The first season, there was a show called Force Majeure, and it was broadcast, I think, in February of 1998. Featured cloned sisters who all had the coloboma defect in their right eye. And I found that really interesting. They were blonde, blue-eyed. Now, I think Maddie has more hazel eyes. But they were blonde, and they were pretty, and they were of all kinds of ages. And I think there were 20 of them. And I highly recommend, if you have not seen Millennium, you know, make sure you see that one.
Yeah, that episode was really interesting. Featured Brad Dourif, wonderful character actor. You might remember him as Grandma Wormtongue in the Lord of the Rings movies. Number of other roles that he plays, usually somebody really menacing and evil. He played a serial killer in an X-Files episode. He played the reincarnated serial killer in The Exorcist III, the one with George C. Scott. So, yeah, Brad Dourif is a guest star in that particular episode of Millennium. And curious that they chose to feature focus on this particular feature. We need to do more research on that coloboma and what significance it might have.
We do. And if you know, if you happen to know what significance that has in the occult world, send us a note, Sharon at ParryIntoDarkness.com. I just want to say one more time, I am not accusing that family of anything. I'm just saying that there are certain things in this case that I find disturbing, and that's what we talked about. So there you go.
So moving on, as we look ahead at 2008, another little interesting couple of tidbits that have come through over the last few days. As we look at the economic situation of the United States and the world looking ahead, the middle class in America, in my opinion, and you know, Lou Dobbs is basically making this a repeat theme, a consistent theme in his nightly broadcast on CNN. The middle class in the United States is being ground into a fine powder to be snorted up the nose of the elites in this country.
Oh gosh, what a picture!
Yeah, that's my analogy, not Lou's. But I think there are some pieces of evidence that indicate this. Now we are finally getting some economic experts that are admitting what we've been saying for some time, and that is the United States is already in a recession. Oops, we slipped into a recession in the fourth quarter of 2007. We just didn't realize it until we got the official employment figures for December of 2007. Apologists for the Republican Party and the Bush administration are saying, well, what? You know, the numbers in those employment figures showed an increase, a jump in unemployment to about 5%, which doesn't sound very high, especially to many parts of the world. But when you add that to the drop in real estate values here in the United States, which has been catastrophic in terms of the exposure of many large financial institutions.
And the sliding dollar.
It really bodes ill for 2008 in terms of the economic prognosis, the economic forecast for the year.
It could be that there are those who will try to prop it up for a while.
Absolutely.
So it may have a smiley face on it for yet another couple of years.
Right. And to that end, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, reporter with the Telegraph in the UK, a guy who wrote extensively about Bill Clinton during his time in Washington. Pritchard, as a reporter for the Telegraph, was one of the few mainstream reporters who was writing openly about the corruption of the Clinton administration during the Clinton presidency. He wasn't taken seriously, and you might remember during the Clinton presidency how all UK press was dismissed as being tabloids. I mean, the London Telegraph is anything but a tabloid.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, Evans Pritchard now writes on economic news, and he reported on Friday that a week before Friday, the president of the United States convened what's called the Plunge Protection Team, which is a group headed up by Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, and includes the chairman of the Fed, Ben Bernanke, and other economic heavy hitters. Their powers to get in and manipulate the markets are nearly unlimited, according to Evans Pritchard. And their goal, their purpose, is to prop up the markets as long as possible. According to Evans Pritchard, they have powers to support the markets in a crisis with a host of instruments, mostly by through buying future contracts or by through buying future contracts on the stock indexes and key credit levers. So in other words, they will use the power of the government in order to prop up, unnaturally inflate the market for a while.
They did the same thing right after 9/11.
Right. They did the same thing after 9/11. And they had not been meeting since 2002, after they kind of stabilized things in the wake of 9/11. They were reconvened a year ago by Secretary Paulson to begin looking at ways they might use their powers to cushion the landing that the U.S. economy was due
using
to have.
Using their powers, I just suddenly flashed on Harry Potter.
Well, you know, it might be that, you know, that these guys are performing some kind of, you know, wizardry back behind the scenes. We don't know. There are some stories we'll touch on here in just a moment, but we're seeing that there are some major economic powers out there, financial institutions that are basically foundering and will fail or are at risk of failure if they don't receive emergency infusions of capital from foreign sources. But this is the interesting thing. The U.S. Housing price crash has dropped the total value of real estate in the U.S. by about $2.5 trillion. That's trillion with a T. $2.5 trillion, which is more than the entire net worth of all the sovereign wealth funds in the world.
Ouch.
Yeah. Add to this, according to Evans Pritchard, losses as property bubbles pop in Britain, Ireland, Australia, Spain, Greece, the Netherlands, Scandinavia, and Eastern Europe, as they surely must, unless central banks opt for inflation. You can discount another $1.5 trillion in further attrition. So we're looking at about $4 trillion in lost wealth around the world due to the popping of the real estate bubble.
I have my hand up.
Yes.
I wonder how many people listening have seen the movie by the Coen brothers, the one with Paul Newman.
The Hudsucker Proxy.
The Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah.
If you have not, go see it, because in that, the old world business guys all get together. Paul Newman's heading it up after the CEO, the head of the company, kills himself. They all get together and decide what's the best way to really get really rich. Let's drive down the price of our stock. Let's get some idiot to come in and take over.
Mismanage the company,
country,
uh-huh.
And drive down the price of our stock,
uh-huh.
And then we'll clean up.
Yep. We'll buy it.
We'll secretly buy it up, and we'll then come out with something that causes the stock to rise like crazy. Right after we get rid of the idiot.
And they'll wind up owning a much larger share
exactly.
of the pie.
So what if that's going on here in the United States? It's being intentionally bankrupted.
In order for sale.
To produce a fire sale.
Yeah.
Other countries, because many of our corporations no longer reside within the United States.
No, they are.
They either partner with or actually have headquarters in other countries. Why, some countries even have 6,000 or more headquartered in one building alone, if you're to believe what's actually on the incorporation records. What if that's actually being done intentionally?
Well, that's an interesting possibility, and let's just toss some evidence your way to consider this. The news came out toward the end of last week that Citicorp, well, it's no longer called Citicorp, it's Citi, C-I-T-I, is being bailed out by a Citigroup, rather, is being bailed out by, Rupert Murdoch's best friend, one of the largest shareholders in News Corp, Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal of the Saudi royal family, who at one time was the largest single shareholder in the old Citicorp. He's ready to pony up about $1.5 billion if estimates in the Wall Street Journal are accurate. In addition, a bank which
was minute, before we leave that guy, isn't he the one who bragged that he was able to tell Rupert Murdoch's
Fox News to stop referring to the rioting in Paris as being the work of Muslim youths, but as Parisian youths. Yeah, that's fair and balanced for you. Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal is one of the wealthiest men in the world. Again, a major investor already in the old Citicorp. He's going to increase his share to just below the $5 billion, or rather the 5% mark, to avoid any problems with American regulations. But still, a 5% stake in a company worth about $140 billion. That's a lot of money, $7 billion investment, roughly. In addition to that, a Chinese bank, which was set up by the Chinese government, one of the three country's three policy banks, is ready to invest a couple of billion in Citigroup. So assets being divvied up by foreign investors. The Saudis, Chinese investing in, okay, I already just talked about that. Kuwaiti money also being invested in Citigroup, it appears. Bear Stearns and Morgan Stanley, a couple of major investment banking groups. Morgan Stanley looking at taking in $5 billion from China Investment Corporation. Again, another major bank set up by the Chinese government. And CITIC Securities Company, which, again, based in China, ready to invest about $1 billion in Bear Stearns. So companies originally based in the United States, I don't know, again, if you can call them American corporations anymore.
Is there such a thing?
Being bailed out by investments from companies that are closely tied to, if not of semi-official, arms of foreign governments, Middle Eastern and Chinese. I don't think this is a good thing. Speaking as an American, I just think this is a bad idea.
I think it's a terrible idea, and it has nothing to do with, you know, being Amerocentric. Mm-hmm. It's saying if we go into Iran, if we make certain decisions in foreign policy and China doesn't like it, are they going to freeze bank accounts?
Makes you wonder. Don't know. And to think that this is just an American problem, by the way, is inaccurate. UBS, which is a Swiss bank that had invested heavily in the U.S. real estate market in recent years, they're having all kinds of problems because of the subprime market crisis, which, by the way, is not just subprime anymore. Bear in mind that the financial geniuses at these banks who approved all of these subprime mortgage investments, also approved all the loans that were made that are not considered subprime. And for us to assume that they were any smarter about those other investments than they were about their mortgage investments is kind of naive. So just keep in mind that in mind as we look at the way this financial crisis shakes out.
Well, I think it would be really easy to say, well, they were idiots for approving them in the first place. They approved us. But
So anyway, UBS.
No, let me finish on that.
Go ahead.
But I think if you want to really take a look at it and ask yourself some hard questions – could it be that, again, this was intentional? Let's see how, you know, we'll make a bunch of interest money off these people. We'll bankrupt these instruments. And then we'll go in and we'll have a fire sale cleanup. And after all the dust settles, we'll do a bunch more loans.
It does feel like a fish being reeled in on a line. You reel them in and then you let out some slack and give them a little play in line and you reel them in a little further. And it does kind of have that feel.
That's how it feels to me.
So we got that going on, and again, the Swiss dealing with one of their largest banks having some problems. This government of Singapore ready to jump in and bail them out.
By the way, I just have to interject in here. I see where we're going. We got about 12, 15 minutes left, right. Something like that. Before we leave today, we have to address New Hampshire. Just want to bring that up.
New Hampshire.
We will talk about it here in a minute.
New Hampshire and President Bush's trip to Israel and the Jonathan Pollard connection.
Gosh, we better get there soon.
Yeah, so I think those are probably the two final things we'll touch on here. Yeah. Boy, you know, we
still need
a
to go get a snack. Hit pause now.
That's the great thing about doing this on a time delayed basis. You can pause and come back without missing any of the.
That's right.
Yeah, replay things like watching highlight films. It's great. Let's have that comment again in slow motion. Anyway, the New Hampshire situation, very briefly. It's being spun by the media as an incredible comeback for Hillary Clinton. However, when some very astute poll watchers began comparing the results from precincts that hand-counted their ballots against those that were counted electronically,
mm-hmm.
Now, these were not touchscreen machines. These are the optical scan machines. You go in and you fill in a card, and they scan it through the it turned out that there was a pretty big discrepancy, and that the hand-counted precincts came out much closer to the pre-vote polls that had been released. In other words, it looked like Barack Obama actually won the New Hampshire primary, if you believe the hand-counted ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like, according to the analysis on the Republican side, that Mitt Romney, even though he didn't win, did much better in the electronic count than he would have done had a hand-counted ballot hand count taken place. He was about 7.5 percentage points higher in the precincts that were electronically counted than he was in the precincts counted by hand, taking roughly even amounts from John McCain, Mike Huckabee, and mm-hmm. Ron Paul.
Added to this was anecdotal evidence that suggests that there was great impropriety in counting the votes on these scanners, because there is in Sutton Precinct or Sutton County.
The town of Sutton, New
Hampshire.
Town
of Sutton, thank you very much. There is very strong evidence that votes were totally counted wrong. There are people who say they voted for Ron Paul, and Ron Paul is reported as having zero votes.
Yeah, and in fact, that was confirmed by the city clerk in Sutton when she was contacted by a blogger who posted this at blackboxvoting.org mm-hmm. on one of the forums there. Said, oh yeah, there were supposed to be 31 votes for Ron Paul. We counted it as zero. It was human error. Well, if
that fell within the the percentage of human errors. Yeah. So we just figured that.
Let us just state for the record to echo a statement I read at George Ure's website, urbansurvival.com. The proper margin of difference between the electronic vote and the hand-counted vote is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is the acceptable margin of error, mm-hmm. zero. So there is a recount that has been commissioned by the Dennis Kucinich campaign, and Kucinich is going to pay the cost for doing it, actually. That'll begin on Wednesday, January the 17th. No, the 15th, today being the 13th. So it'll begin
on Wednesday. I think it's the 16th.
Whatever date that happens to be, it'll begin on Wednesday. So
we're talking today on
right,
Sunday
16th.
The 13th. So.
Yes, you are correct. It is the 16th. So that recount will begin on January 16th, and we'll watch to see what happens, what comes
out. And there's not – I've been watching the news the last 2 days, and I've seen nothing on there about a recount in New Hampshire. Because as far as the talking heads on the major cable news, they don't care. As far as they're concerned, they have declared, quote-unquote, winners, when in fact the states that have had mm-hmm. elections, so to speak, they are not winner-take-all states.
Right.
It should be no different than when you look at the actual presidential election in mm-hmm. November. This person has so many votes, electoral college votes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this person has so many representatives going to the convention.
Right. And unlike the way votes are distributed for the electoral college and these primaries, these electors that go to the conventions – you're right. It's not a winner-take-all thing.
No.
So right
so
now,
it may
fact,
not be
Mitt
that.
Romney, you look
yes.
at Mitt Romney right now is leading the Republican candidates in the number of committed delegates to
right.
the Republican.
Right. And I'm sure he knows that. And
sure.
yet it isn't being reported that way.
It's being spun that John McCain is the guy out in front, and he's the, and my own personal observation, John McCain is just Bob Dole Redux. They're basically mm-hmm. setting up Hillary to win the whole thing.
They are.
So anyway, we need to talk about Jonathan Pollard and why this story is significant. President Bush, of course, was in the Middle East over the past week, and he's pushing now for a Palestinian state before he leaves office. Ooh, that's interesting.
You know, the last time we had a president go over and do that was in 2000 when Bill Clinton was over there, and he was so determined
mm-hmm.
to have a peace treaty in place before his presidency was over. He wanted that to be his legacy. Mm-hmm. Well, he's had a different legacy. But now Bush is over there trying to do the very same thing. And I think he has been making some backroom deals with Olmert and some of the others, the other ministers. And they are not deals that are in Israel's best best interest.
No.
And one of them of the deals that may have been made, and we don't have strong evidence for this, it just is suggestive. Apparently at a working dinner with the ministers, some of the ministers from Israel, Bush and Olmert, Bush wanted to bring someone, I think it was Bush, brought up Jonathan Pollard. And Olmert, no, maybe it was one of the ministers, asked about Jonathan Pollard. And Olmert said, we will not discuss that here. This is a matter that Israel has been pushing for mm-hmm. what, 20 years?
Yeah. Jonathan Pollard was arrested in November 1985, accused of spying on the United States, which he was doing.
Yes.
And he was basically sentenced to life in prison.
The question is, who benefited from
right.
He was spying, but who was paying him?
Right.
Who benefited from it?
Now, part of the reason we're bringing up this story is that at a dinner, following this working dinner with President Bush, the president shook hands with a minister in Israel named Rafi Eitan, who at the time was the head of a spy division, the Bureau of Scientific Relations, which is an mm-hmm. Israeli secret service. He was Pollard's contact in
exactly.
Israel.
And the minute Pollard was arrested, that organization suddenly folded.
And Eitan has not been allowed in the United States since then.
Right.
So
Bush met with him.
Well, or at least met him at the dinner and shook his hand. Now, I don't know that he met with him and had any talks with him, but it is significant because it
that
raises the whole Pollard.
He was invited at all. He's been
right.
An
persona
outcast.
Non grata in the United States. Now, why is Jonathan Pollard significant? Well, it was believed at the time that Pollard was arrested that he was responsible for giving Israel a list of every American spy inside the Soviet Union, which then was turned over to the Soviets and allowed for the execution of some 40 American spies inside the Soviet Union. Suddenly, mm-hmm. we went blind inside the Soviet Union. I mean, 40 American—that's a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
And Pollard was believed to be responsible, so he was charged and basically locked away. Benjamin Netanyahu had tried to make the case that Pollard needed to be released with a couple of different American presidents. Now he's been rebuffed. It's like, no, he's not even. It's not on the table. Forget it. Don't even talk about it. John Loftus, who has been he was the guy who broke the story about 20 years ago of the CIA's protection and sponsorship of Nazis after World War II. John Loftus, the author of the book Secret War Against the Jews, which the Collins brothers cite heavily in their research, mm-hmm. which we need to read. He has an article that we're going to link to at PIDradio.com. And it's one that you really need to read because this impacts not only on American-Israeli relations, but also on what's happened since with our Arab relations and might help explain what's going on, you know, over the last 20 years, but especially since 9/11. What Pollard actually did was passed along a list of spies that were basically on the CIA payroll working for the Saudis. Okay? Spies who were you know, guys working for the CIA, but kind of off the books mm-hmm. because the CIA was still smarting. This was in the wake of the revelation that the CIA had sponsored these Nazi agents who, of course, you know, long story short, are responsible for setting up the Arab Muslim, radical Muslim terror networks mm-hmm. that we see in the world today. Pollard actually sent to Israel a list of the spies being run by the Saudis, and this book shows that the United States knew about the connections between Saudi and terror because some of these guys, like Osama bin Laden, their names show up in these books, which predate 9/11 by about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In other words, the U.S. intelligence services, the U.S. government, knew about the connections between the Saudis and radical Muslim terror groups. Some of the guys mentioned in these books being, you know, guys connected to 9/11 and what happened would show that we were aware of what was happening in the world 10 years or more before 9/11. And that is a secret that cannot be let out, which is why Jonathan Pollard must never be allowed to speak in public ever again. It explains much about why we seemed so powerless in the face of these terror groups, why we couldn't do anything about it, why guys like John O'Neill, the former FBI agent, mm-hmm. who became the new head of security mm-hmm. at the Twin Towers and was killed in the attack
that day, huh?
Right, got so frustrated with his superiors and couldn't get anything done as he tried to say, you know, we need to confront the Saudis about their connection. No, it's because they were being run by the Saudis at the request of the CIA, who wanted to keep the official connections off the books. And that's what Pollard stole. That's what he sent to Israel. And that's what the United States does not want to get out, that we knew about these connections and that they were being – and that those connections had been made at mm-hmm. the request of the U.S. intelligence services.
Okay. So here's my take on it. If indeed the United States is starting to soften on the Pollard issue, mm-hmm. why would they be doing it now?
Yeah.
It's twofold. One could be that the news is getting out there, the truth about Pollard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many articles, including, you know, what John Loftus is writing, that indeed it's not such a big secret anymore. The other part of the twofold issue for me is that Olmert is willing to let there be a Palestinian state at all. And that appears to be something that he is considering. Remember, Ariel Sharon is in a coma. I don't think Ariel Sharon would have done this.
Probably not.
I don't think so. But Olmert is, I think, considering allowing it because the quartet, so to speak, and I always think the four horsemen when I hear it, mm-hmm. you know, that there's a quartet involved in the roadmap to peace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the roadmap to peace is failing if they can't get a Palestinian state.
Right.
That's one of the requirements for that peace deal.
Mm-hmm.
If he does that, if Olmert does that, could it be it's one of the payments for that is Pollard's release?
That's very possible. Very possible. And here's another wild hair as we come close to wrapping up. Is it possible that these Saudi angels who are stepping forward to bail out American mm-hmm. financial institutions that are in trouble could be forcing American foreign policy mm-hmm. in a certain direction?
I know. And you said that the other day, and I think that is so brilliant because I would say that Pollard aside, that is very likely what's taking place mm-hmm. here. And that is the very reason that other governments should not be allowed to buy into our financial institutions.
Right. I mean, can you imagine the American economy, the impact, if a corporate entity like Citigroup were to suddenly give up the ghost and say, sorry, we can't meet our obligations, we're failing? Well, you know, not just from the people directly mm-hmm. affected, but from the consumer confidence. If Citigroup were to fail,
we would be in a depression, not a recession. We would be in a big, fat depression.
Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things to consider. We've got foreign governments stepping forward to bail out the American, you know, the big hitters in American banking, while at the same time we're in the Middle East trying to force Israel to accept terms. The terms would create a new Palestinian state.
And at the same time, we've got to squeeze this in really fast. There was the whole incident in the Straits of Hormuz where our ships from the Fifth Fleet were harassed by speedboats that were supposed to be from Iran. I don't know if they were or not, because they're now the Fifth Fleet is now starting to back off on the story. It certainly looks like and we're looking for, you and I have been looking for, and you know, to his credit, Ron Paul many years ago said we need to start looking for another Gulf of Tonkin incident.
And this past week, and this was something we reported a year ago because a newspaper in Australia reported this a year ago, but it was again in the news within the last week that official documents released by law by the National Security Agency, the NSA, confirm that the United States deliberately fed President Johnson mm-hmm. false information about a Vietnamese attack on American ships at the Gulf of Tonkin, which led to President Johnson committing fully to the war in Vietnam.
That's right. If that's news to you, we'll put a link to the story. You can read all about it. If you have questions for us, you can send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com or individually at Sharon or at Derek@peeringintodarkness.com.
And the show notes are always available online at PIDradio.com. The articles we talked about will be linked in the show notes. Do look those up and do your research. We encourage you to think for yourselves. And the discussion link at the PTD, the Piercing the Darkness Forum, is right there at PIDradio.com as well.
And as always, thank you very much to Daniel Eaton for taking care of that for
us. Amen to that. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
On demand.
This is PID Radio.